A very good morning to everyone. The court will hear our oral argument first, number 054388, Associate Benefits against Caremark et al.
Good morning. May it please the court, David Novoselsky on behalf of the appellant counsel. I know the court has read the material, so if I may try to be brief and answer the questions the court has. The decision below was a summary judgment, which of course means that this court's task is not a question of deferring to findings of fact by the trier of fact, but looking at this as a matter of law. The trial court agreed with the defendants that there was, on three items, one, that there was no enforceable contract as a matter of law. Second, there was no basis for unjust enrichment. And third, there was no fraud. The contract, which is fairly brief, is laid out at pages 4 and on 5 of our opening brief in its entirety. The contract, very simply, was our client met with the defendant, introduce them to a company which the defendant hoped to enter into a relationship with for their benefit. There was an agreement that our client, if they facilitated the meeting and the introduction, would be paid a commission.
What was your client's relationship?
My client was...
With AAA.
They knew them. There was no contractual relationship between my client and the ultimate provider of services. This was simply, if you will, a business introduction. My client was acting as an agent to obtain a partnership, if you will. That was the way they referred to it. In other words, we will go out and find you somebody who will be able to fulfill these prescription contracts with you. My client then introduces the defendant to the ultimate end of the contract. In other words, the other end of the contract that the defendant ultimately enters into with the company.
Is the introduction the full amount of the consideration?
Yes, sir.
That's it?
No. The consideration is we will introduce you. If you enter into a contractual relationship with that company, you will pay us a commission. There's no question that the defendant did not have a relationship with the other company until this meeting takes place. The contract says we will introduce you. We will take you there. If you enter into a contract, you will pay us. The letter contract.
That's basically a finder's fee then.
Yes, sir.
And that's it. That's all you have to do.
That's what the contract provides for. The contract doesn't provide, and again, it's a fairly short document. There, no one has suggested that we were supposed to provide services beyond, let's call it the matchmaking. In other words, our client's the matchmaker. She's, I can't remember the name of the woman in Fiddler on the Roof. She put the parties together. They got married. Now, in some circles, that might be grounds for shooting my client. But the point is here, they wanted to get married. They said, find me a suitable bride, if you will. That was the contract. We found them the bride. They got married. They've had a benefit from that. Now, there were various arguments they raised as to whether Mr. Lee had authority. That's an issue of fact. This is a diversity case. This was removed to this court. This is not a case tried under federal law, but under Illinois law. All of the issues they raise, this supposed lack of necessary terms, don't exist. Also, we have, there's no question here, we have at least partial performance, which takes it outside of the realm of the argument that you needed a, you know, that they had to sign there. They say, well, you had to sign the contract first. There is nothing in the contract that requires signature by my party. That came later. That doesn't vitiate the arrangement under this contract. The other issue that comes up is the trial court said there was no basis for unjust enrichment. Now, there's, again, no real dispute. Illinois law does not require fault in unjust enrichment cases or bad conduct, if you will. But here it's very simple. We did, no question, introduce them to their bride, if you will, if I can use that analogy. They have profited from that relationship. They don't dispute the fact that but for our introduction, they would have never met their prospective bride and gotten married. Illinois law provides, and I think we've given you the cite from the Illinois Supreme Court, That's HPI versus Mount Vernon. It's in our reply brief and on our main brief, 131 Illinois 2nd, 145. There's no question here that they obtained a benefit as a result of our work. They have declined to pay us anything, although there were some negotiations later saying afterwards, now we'd like to change the commission structure, which they claim somehow allows them to vitiate their initial deal. We say no. So whether it's couched in terms of a contract or unjust enrichment, there may be defenses. I'm not suggesting to this court that we were entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law because they had some defenses. They were all factual in nature. I could stand up here and complete the rest of my 10 minutes, but I think that's this case in a nutshell. This is not a case where the principles go really beyond law school as far as contract law, partial performance, we have that here. Unjust enrichment is right under the restatement. There is nothing unique about this case. Very respectfully, I think the trial court simply erred in accepting their arguments. We would ask it to be reversed and remanded so the case can be heard by a jury to the extent that they still have some defenses they wish to raise. If the court has no questions, I'd like to reserve.
State of the record with respect to Mr. Lee's authority to enter into that contract.
That was raised. We know he was vice president of sales. There is nothing in the record that shows that he lacked the authority. He clearly, under Illinois law, had apparent authority. He was a vice president of the company. That's in the facts. I think if you look at 49 through 53 of the Rule 56-1 statement, he was clearly, there's no dispute that he was an authority, that he was an officer. He was a vice president. He was, when he drafted this letter, if you look at the letter doesn't say, I'll need to get further authority to do this, and I will do so. The letter purports to reflect complete authority. There is nothing in the record that ever disputes at least a lack of apparent authority, which under Illinois law would be a question of fact if it pleased the court. Again, there may be many factual disputes. I'm not telling the court that there should have been cross motions for summary judgment. Most of what they raised were defenses which were factual in nature, which unfortunately the trial court took as issues to be resolved as a matter of law. Again, I thank the court for its attention this morning.
Thank you, sir. We'll hear from Mr. Baig now.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Michael Baig. I represent the appellees in this case. Your Honors, before I start, I'd like to just, for purposes of clarity, tell the court that at the time that the initial lawsuit was filed, Caremark PCS, who's the principal appellee in this case, was referred to and known by the name of Advance PCS. That's how we've treated them in our briefs. And so for purposes of this argument, I will refer to Caremark PCS as Advance PCS. Your Honors, our position is quite simple, and that is that Judge Cannelli reviewed the extensive record before him and concluded that ABS's claims for breach of contract, promissory fraud, and unjust enrichment were not sufficiently supported by the evidence to withstand summary judgment, and we would ask that this court would affirm. I have a few points, Your Honors, but before I get into those, I'd like to address some of the points made by Mr. Novoselsky, if I may. In particular, Mr. Novoselsky has tried to characterize this case as a finder's fee case. That's not supported by the record, Your Honors. Finder's fee case, traditionally, the finder is nothing more than an intermediary, does nothing beyond, as Mr. Novoselsky alluded, making a match. The record here doesn't indicate in any way that all that ABS needed to do in this case in order to collect commissions was simply make an introduction. The language of the letter, which ABS purports to be a contract, certainly contains no language to that effect. In fact, there's no language in the letter whatsoever with respect to any performance obligations, duties, or responsibilities of ABS at all. Moreover, Your Honors, if the court were to look at the record, in particular the briefs filed by ABS in this case, ABS admits three times in those briefs that, in fact, they contemplated having to do more than just introduce the parties in order to collect commissions. In particular, Your Honors, at page 7 of the opening brief, ABS says, and I'm quoting, "This is a case where ABS offered to introduce Advanced PCS to AAA and help Advanced PCS obtain a contract." Page 13, and again I'm quoting, ABS says that they were agreeing to, quote, "effectuate the introduction between Advanced PCS and AAA and foster negotiations between them." That evidence in the appellant's own hand undermines the argument that this is simply a finder's fee case and all that ABS was going to do was make a match here. Similarly, Mr. Novoselsky argued that there was partial performance here. The introduction of the parties was partial performance of ABS's obligations. But again, the language of the letter, which ABS purports to be a contract, is silent as to what ABS was supposed to do. The record undermines the fact that partial performance could be simply an introduction by the parties here.
With this introduction, everybody knows about AAA. Is there something that enables you to get past the door? I don't quite understand what this introduction is. There's no relationship, contractual relationship. So what was your client looking for besides someone to just introduce? Is there somebody special there at AAA that nobody else knew? What's the deal?
Well, it's our position, Your Honor, that the document in question here is not clear as to what exactly the parties contemplated. Certainly, there's no dispute that ABS presented to Mr. Lee that if he did not go through them, the meeting on the 19th would not happen, and there would be no introduction through ABS. But it's unclear exactly as to what the parties contemplated by looking at the document which ABS purports to be the contract in this case.
Well, what happened?
I'm sorry?
Was there somebody that just had limited access to a person at AAA that your client wouldn't have otherwise had? There must have been some special relationship that they're claiming that enabled you to get the front row.
Well, that's what they represent in their briefs, and that's what Mr. Coppedge or Mr. Bestrom, the president or the business development consultant for ABS, made that representation to Mr. Lee, which turned out to be false. The representation being that AAA was ABS's client and ABS was acting as a consultant to AAA. So at the time that Mr. Lee went down on the 19th of May 2003 to Florida to meet with AAA, he was under the impression that there was some special relationship here between ABS and AAA and that without ABS's involvement, he wouldn't get in the door. But that turned out not to be the case, Your Honor. The record reflects clearly that there was no client relationship between ABS and AAA at the time the introduction was made. So the record reveals, we believe, that there was a misrepresentation on ABS's part that there was a special relationship and that without them we couldn't, in fact, get in the door. And moreover, Your Honor, although it's not clearly established in the record, there is some evidence in the record that, and it's the case that Caremark, or Advanced PCS, is one of only maybe two or three PBMs, prescription benefit managers, in the country that are of a size where they could handle an account such as AAA. So it's our view that, you know, it's not in the record, but it's our view that the introduction was we would not have needed ABS to get in the door. And that, moreover, the representation by ABS that we needed them was based on a false statement. Now, Your Honors, if I may, Mr. Novoselsky said that it's undisputed that Mr. Lee lacked authority to sign a contract on behalf of Advanced PS. That's disputed, Your Honor. And there's no evidence to undermine Mr. Lee's statement that he did not have actual authority. That there's no dispute as to that. Mr. Lee said, "I had no actual authority," and that's not disputed. In order for there to be apparent authority, what Mr. Novoselsky left out is that it's ABS's burden to establish that, and ABS has not done that. The record is clear that The case law is clear in Illinois that in order to prove apparent authority, ABS has to show that Advanced PCS here consented or acquiesced in Mr. Lee's purported exercise of authority, and that based on the actions of both Advanced PCS and Lee, ABS relied to its detriment. The fact of the matter is, Your Honor, this letter, to the extent that ABS claims it's a contract, was never conveyed to anyone at Advanced PCS. And there's nothing in the record to indicate that anyone from Advanced PCS made any representations to ABS with respect to Mr. Lee's authority to enter into contracts at all.
Assuming their position to be correct, then the only indication of authority would be the statement of Lee, indicating that he had apparent authority?
There was no statement to that effect.
Well, he purported to be working, doing it, didn't he? Didn't he purport to represent him? Well, what was he doing there at all?
Oh, no doubt. He purported to represent...
That's my question. Is that the only evidence in the record of the existence of the agency, and is that's the predicate for the apparent authority?
That's all there is, Your Honor. The fact that he showed up as a representative of Advanced PCS and was representing them in that meeting. That's it. But that's not enough under the Illinois case law, and there's nothing in the record. It's their burden, ABS's burden, to establish actual or apparent authority, and they haven't done it.
They have to show.
I'm sorry?
What in your view, did they have to show?
They would have to show that there was some indication or representation by Advanced PCS, Mr. Lee's employer, directly to ABS, saying, in fact, he does have authority to enter into a contract on our behalf. And there's nothing to that effect. There's no evidence that they even made an inquiry or tendered the supposed contract.
Have a corporate officer come to a meeting and purport to have the authority to bind the corporation in a sales situation? He's vice president of sales. The law of Illinois requires the other company check his credentials before they enter this? Is that your point?
No, the point is that there has to be something more than Mr. Lee's representation. So let's say Mr. Lee went to the meeting and said pointedly, I have authority to enter into contracts on behalf of Advanced PCS, which the record doesn't establish that occurred. There would have to be something more than just that for there to be apparent authority here. There would have to be a representation by Advanced PCS that, in fact, that statement was true, or that Mr. Lee, in fact, does have authority to represent us and to enter into contracts on our behalf. And that's nowhere in the record.
Would his title indicate an apparent authority? The title was given to him by your client, wasn't it?
No, Your Honor, that's not sufficient.
Well, was the title bestowed by your client and Mr. Lee?
I believe so. The time he was hired as a vice president of sales.
Isn't that an indication of apparent authority when they hire him and say, you're in charge of sales?
Not apparent authority to enter into binding contracts on behalf of the company, no.
Well, what is? What if they had fulfilled their burden, what would they have produced? What would they have shown?
They would have had to show, again, some kind of indication from Advanced PCS directly to them.
But they got it because his title was vice president in charge of sales.
Your Honor, respectfully, the title alone is not enough to confer authority to enter into contracts.
Well, if I give you a title of vice president in charge of sales and you go out and sell something, can you renege on it because we didn't give authority to sell?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, but that's not the issue before the court, respectfully. It's whether or not
he had
authority to sign a contract.
The issue is whether or not the title by itself, bestowed by your client, gave an indication of authority to bind the company in contract obligations. Isn't that the issue?
I don't believe that's the issue, Your Honor.
Well, okay, describe the issue to me.
Well, the issue is, as I say, whether or not there was any kind of actual representation, and a title in and of itself confers nothing more than a title. It doesn't tell anything about the scope of the individual's responsibilities, duties.
So anybody doing business with your company through Lee would have to require a separate document or a separate statement from the company saying, in fact, that Lee did have the authority to do what he's doing.
Well, on these facts, they would, and that's...
In any situation, somebody dealing with your company who is through Lee would have to, in order to bind him, he'd have to get some additional information other than the fact that he was, in fact, the honest-to-gosh vice president in charge of sales.
If, in fact, there was no actual authority, that's correct. And there's
how would you find out actual authority? Would he carry around a letter saying, hey, this man has actual authority to bind me, sign? Who would sign that? The president?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I know in this case there was no representation of actual authority. Mr. Lee said he didn't have authority to bind the company. He did not have actual authority.
Well, he had no authority to. If he had no other indication of authority than if he walking in saying, I represent the company, you're dead right. I mean, that wouldn't be enough. But if he comes in cloaked with an indicia of authority that was given to him by your client, it seems to me just an abstract thing that he seems to have apparent authority.
But, Your Honor, the case law in Illinois also makes clear that in an instance where there is some inquiry notice on the part of, in this case, ABS, that, in fact, the individual doesn't have actual authority, there's a duty to do more, to double-check, if you will. And that's not what happened here. In our case, there was a contract that was entered into by these parties, separate and apart from the one at issue here, a month or two prior to May 19th. And in that instance, Mr. Lee, it was clear, had no authority whatsoever. He tendered the document. It had to go back to the home office for signature by an executive VP before the parties could reach an agreement. And in this instance, there was no effort whatsoever on the part of ABS.
So he said, I'm making this offer, but it has to be approved by the home office.
That's absolutely right. And then the next time around, there's this representation.
I finally got your point.
I'm sorry, I didn't make it clear, Your Honor, that this document is a contract and Mr. Lee was cloaked with authority. But the fact is that ABS had indicia that was not the case. Inquiry notice, if you will, never made any effort to find out whether, in fact, Mr. Lee had authority to enter into this contract.
Anything ever said to ABS about Mr. Lee not having authority, that the executive vice president did have to sign and bind the company?
I don't believe that issue was actually fully briefed or before the court below, Your Honor.
Let me change the focus just for a moment. At any point in this litigation, did you raise the issue of fraudulent inducement with respect to this contract?
Did Advance PCS?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, Your Honor.
So didn't you take the general position of what barred me? There was no contract?
Well, there was no claim of fraudulent inducement.
Well, if there was no contract, there's no fraud. You weren't induced to enter a contract that doesn't exist.
Correct. I thought Judge Ripple's question was whether or not my client ever raised the issue of fraudulent inducement.
Yeah, you assume it as an alternate argument.
No.
Well, you do, as I understand it, say you at least were under a misapprehension with respect to ABS's status.
That's correct.
You thought they were an agent of the American Automobile Association.
Correct.
Right. But you're not suggesting that they fraudulently made that representation, and it was on the basis of that representation that Mr. Lee acted.
Well, we are saying that it was based on that representation that Mr. Lee was willing to give the letter, but we never formally made any kind of claims below that there was fraudulent inducement, because it's our position that there was never a contract.
I understand that, but you didn't make this argument in the alternative.
No, Your Honor. Not in a formal sense, other than to say, as we've done in the briefs, that the misrepresentation was one of the assumptions that Mr. Lee was operating under when he tendered the letter, that there was a relationship between AAA and ABS, client-consultant relationship.
Suppose you were to lose today and we were to find there was a genuine issue of triable fact. On remand, would you be in a position to raise the question as to whether or not whatever Mr. Lee did, he did simply because of fraud on the other side and how they represented their relationship with the American Automobile Association?
I don't know, Your Honor. I'd have to consider that argument below, but I can't answer the question right now.
I see.
Could I follow up here?
Sure.
I know the red light's on. I want to go back to going the other direction. It says in this contract, whatever you want to call it, we commit to deliver unparalleled service and prescription benefits that will enhance the quality of membership in the organizations that you serve and to implement all groups expeditiously and efficiently. So they're talking about all groups that you serve, and that means something to me the groups that Mr. Coppedge or whatever serves. Presumably one of those is AAA. Is that correct? Do I read that correctly?
I suppose you could read it that way. I know, Your Honor, the
Well, I'm trying to look at it from the standpoint of why someone gives this letter out. There's a presumption in here that this ABS serves certain groups, including AAA.
Correct.
Isn't that? I thought that was the assertion you were making. You assumed they had a relationship.
Correct.
Does that language indicate a relationship? Or are you claiming that it does?
Well,
what
I think,
does it mean to all groups to in the quality of the membership in the organizations that you serve? You don't just serve it because you know somebody and have an introduction. Are you assuming that serving means that they have some relationship? And I thought that was at least
yes.
your argument. You thought they were part of AAA.
They had an affiliation consultant-client relationship with AAA, absolutely, and that they would be serving AAA, doing more than just introducing us, but serving, helping us to serve that entity. AAA would be included in that, Your Honor.
And I assume once in the door and talking directly with AAA, Mr. Lee would, if they said, great, we'll make a deal with you, Mr. Lee, maybe he has to call the home office, maybe he can enter into a contract, I don't know. I assume AAA would want to know that. But he has apparent authority to do something, at least to represent to the company, AAA, that what their services are and how they can benefit AAA.
Absolutely, and to attempt to solicit business, but not to enter into a legally binding
contract. Okay, so you're
going to
carry it that far, then. Even when he gets in the door with AAA, he doesn't have apparent authority.
That's correct.
All right.
If there's nothing further, Your Honors, I see that the red light has long been on. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagan. I'm sorry?
Seven
minutes, thank you.
David Novoselsky again. I apologize if I don't take the seven, but let me cut to the chase. The argument you heard was an argument of fact and a jury argument. The record reflects, number one, that the testimony of my clients in their depositions was that they were in fact retained by AAA to go out and find them somebody like the defendant. The defendant later says that's not true. You don't have anything to the contrary. At most, you have a dispute of fact. And the evidence was we did have a relationship. Number two, there was a discussion, if you look at the depositions, when they met with Mr. Lee, who told them, I do have authority to do this. They did not want to. This is no different than any other. If you have somebody who's an insurance agent and they place a policy, they get a commission for placing the policy. What you have here is the defendant gets its foot in the door after assuring our client, because there was a question, who are we dealing with? I have authority to do it. It's a disputed fact. This was not just casually, we're now going to take you in with, we don't know who you are, we never made any inquiry. And there was never a statement made, according to my clients, that he needed ratification from anyone, nor does this letter indicate that it had to be co-signed.
Okay, then, is the fact question, because I'd ask you the same thing about this language of the quality of membership in the organizations that you
we
serve.
We serve, yes. Our position was we told them, and that was our position, we were asked by AAA to go out and find them somebody to serve their members.
And all of my experience is that a finder, when you hire a finder, you pay them.
Judge, that's what this is about. If we want to be blunt, we've got somebody who made a whole lot of money and wants to cut us out after we got their foot in the door.
AAA wanted you to find somebody.
The deal was that AAA was simply paying them for their services. They agreed to give us a commission on what they charged AAA. We didn't have a cause of action against AAA. We didn't have a deal from AAA.
What benefit? You've got this relationship with AAA. How do you get compensated for your relationship with AAA?
Because there would be no different than an insurance relationship where somebody says, go out and find me insurance companies to take care of my people. We place the insurance with them. The insurance company pays you the agent's fee. It's when this is typical in group health policies, group life policies. You have General Motors. They're not in the insurance business. They hire an insurance consultant. Say, go out, find us a good company. The payment is made by the insurance company based on the number of policies issued. That's what you have here. So much per prescription paid, we give you a percentage. Because we're the ones who charge AAA and their members. AAA isn't paying. It's that drug company, the defendant, who is charging for its services. So a percentage of the charge they collect comes to us.
Yeah, see, I guess I'm just looking at there's a providing service, prescription, benefit, and all that. That's what they do. The finding issue is where I guess I'm confused, because when someone hires you to find, and maybe I'm being too direct on it, they hired you to find somebody. Generally, you pay the person that you hired to find.
Except in this position, you're...
Maybe you said, and maybe they then said, and then you can, whatever you can get out of them.
Yeah, that's what it is here.
Okay, that's
the
fact.
And again, this is a little different, because AAA isn't providing the prescription drugs. Defendant is. The payments are being made to the defendant by AAA members. So the payment, AAA really isn't involved in the payment at all. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is like the group insurance situation. General Motors doesn't provide the insurance, but it's a benefit that goes to their employees. The employees presumably pay, or a portion of that, when the payments go to the insurance company, whatever the insurance company benefits, they pay the agent who brought them to them. So we were acting, even though we were hired by AAA, we said, go out and find somebody for us. If it's consummated, there's no question the deal was consummated. That's what this is about. If I really commit simplicity, they welched on the deal. They got their foot in the door. They got a large benefit. And this even goes back to unjust enrichment, which they've blown by completely.
Now, who is Mr. Blix?
Mr. Blix was the CEO of my client. And Mr. Kovich is the president.
And they had a continuing discussion and ultimately rejected whatever contract came up in September.
What they tried to do was rewrite it after the fact. In other words, instead of paying you the dollar we owe you for sake of argument, we've got this contract. How about we only pay you a percentage of what we owe you? And Mr. Blix said, forget it. You owe us what you owe us. And this whole concept of, well, we rejected that contract, we don't have to. Under Illinois law or under Hornbook law, when somebody basically says to us, we're not honoring the contract, but I'll tell you what, if you'll take half the loaf, we might give it to you. We can insist on performance of the original deal. And we did. And again, there's no question here. The whole concept of promissory estoppel, and I understood the question that was asked, was did we fraudulently tell them we were the agent of AAA? That's a defense they may have, but it's a factual defense. Conspicuous by its absence in this record is something from AAA, and even then it would be a question of fact. But if you want to deal with this, if you were the jury, where is AAA in all this? Where is AAA saying these people are complete strangers, which makes no sense, because how did they get their foot in the door if we were complete strangers to AAA? I mean, if... I don't want to say forget the law, but how about common sense?
Well, I don't know about
we're complete
the door,
strangers.
When I go to get in a cab, there's some guy there oftentimes wanting to open the door for me.
Well, it's tough to get into the door with a big company like AAA. And if you accept what they said...
The guy opening the door has nothing to do with the cab, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know who they are.
But here, what they'd have you believe is we were complete strangers to AAA. And somehow, we have this letter which sure appears grateful for what we're doing. And they get their foot in the door, and now they say, you know what, you were total strangers. You had no relationship. We have no contract. We're not enriched. We have all these wonderful arguments for the jury. But fortunately, the trial court accepted them instead. If the case goes back, and I assure this court it should, right, ask the court that it does, these are all valid arguments that a jury may accept, but they may not. And that's all we're asking today is for our hearing. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.